Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. Show your team pride with the Georgia Bulldogs debit card. Check out gucu.org/godogs for more details.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
There is something pretty weird going on, and I'm curious to see if you've noticed this for yourself. Certainly seems like a team that should not have a whole lot of concern for the Georgia Bulldogs is spending a lot of time worrying about UGA. Pretty sure we talked about that last week, and I think it's time for us to talk about that again today just a little bit. If you remember last week, the whole thing was about the light show. Georgia had a chance to create a very impressive home field advantage for the Notre Dame game two Saturdays ago, and part of that were the little twinkling lights, I don't know how else to say it, the red LED lights, bringing the lights down, flashing the stadium lights, kind of the next phase of kind of modern stadium development. Georgia was able to put that on display last Saturday, and it was kind of a great experience, and every Georgia fan had a good time with that. These things are rampant around the NFL right now, and it all seemed like that was going to be that, right? However, for Alabama fans, there was this weird response of they also have their lights. They're not sure when they're going to get to use theirs. They play such a weak non-conference schedule. They don't get very many night games this time of year. The typical night game they know they always get to play when they host LSU, that was taken from them this year. That was given to Georgia for the primetime spot, CBS against the Fighting Irish. So there was a little angst from Alabama fans, at least a strong pocket of them. There was a lot of Twitter responses about this that we read for you last week, a little angst from them about, well, you know, Georgia just copied our lights anyway. I mean, how many times did we go through that last week of, Georgia's showing off these lights, but they copied them. Remember, if you'll remember, it got so bad that we showed you the tweet last week from Barrett Salee from CBS Sports responding to some people on that. Josh Brooks, who kind of runs the stadium operations for Georgia there at Dooley Field at Sanford Stadium, he kind of came in on this and talked about that just a little bit. There was a lot of that kind of talk going on where the Alabama fans who, let's face it, got to give them credit, they're the reigning SEC champion. They won the national championship 2 years ago. They seem to have plenty of good things going on. They're back to number one in the polls again this week because of how badly Clemson played against North Carolina. It would seem that kind of everything is kind of in good shape when it comes to Alabama, but seemingly they spend a little bit of time worried about the Georgia Bulldogs, an example of that from last week, and also an example of that from this week here too, because there was a video that got passed around Alabama fans on Twitter. That's kind of how I became aware of this. Someone shared it with me, of Reggie Ragland, former Alabama linebacker. And Ragland was in the locker room for his current team, the Kansas City Chiefs, and he was noticing that Mecole Hardman, obviously you know him as the former Georgia receiver and a kick returner, and Hardman got a little box from Georgia full of gear, right, T-shirts and sweatshirts and hats, whatever else that kind of comes in a box like this. And apparently Alabama's been doing this for a long time. And Ragland is of the strong belief, stronger opinion than an issue like this would seem to warrant, of the strong belief that somehow this is an example of some sort of egregious copycat behavior on the part of the Georgia Bulldogs. Mecole Hardman, you're going to see this in the video for yourself in a moment, at least for those of you who are watching. If you're listening, you'll hear this in a moment. Hardman is, like, shocked by the whole thing. It's just the whole thing is bizarre to him. But listen to Reggie Ragland, apparently big mad that Georgia sends care packages to its NFL players. This whole thing is just weird. Here's Reggie Ragland.
Georgia want to be like us so bad. And they're right, Miko, y'all want to be like us so bad with the Bucs. Man, that's crazy. It don't matter. He can't be like that. He got to do something else at Georgia, bro. He can't do it. It don't matter. He got to go teach something else.
So I like the fact that Hardman, if you're a radio podcaster, realize you can't see this. I'll describe it for you. You know, McColl's on his phone. He's not even trying to be a part of this. Reggie Ragland, who, by the way, only has one tackle all season long, Mecole Hardman's actually become a fairly sizable part of the Kansas City Chiefs offense. So apparently Ragland's got some free time on his hands to be worried about issues like this, is going around saying that, this is Georgia copying Alabama. Alabama apparently been sending these care packages, boxes, to its NFL players for a long time, and this is an example of them copying Georgia on that. Hardman barely even looks up from his phone. He's too busy worried about, you know, what a fast-rising NFL wide receiver is probably worried about. He's not worried about these childish things the way that Ragland seems to be bothered by that. But this whole, but the reason why I even became aware of this, and you saw it on your screen for those of you watching on video, the Alabama fans like, Reggie Ragland's telling the truth. You know, this has been going on for a long time, and Georgia's been copying Alabama's tactic. Now say this out loud and see how weird this sounds. Copying Alabama's tactic of sharing Georgia-themed gear with the players in the NFL, as if that was some sort of like trademarkable tactic that Alabama's using. Although the story does get more interesting from here. Drew Butler, friend of our program, we've had him here on Dog Nation Daily before. Drew Butler tweeted out this week, Butler was obviously a former punter with the Arizona Cardinals, spent some time in the NFL, and he says this idea that the care packages to NFL players began with Nick Saban in Alabama, as if every good idea that's ever happened somehow has to emanate from Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Drew Butler kind of threw some water on that. Let me show you this tweet in response to all this. Drew tweets out, shout out to Reggie Ragland for uncovering this tweet from 4 years ago. Alabama actually doesn't own everything in college football. And if you see Drew Butler on Twitter, there's actually a picture of all the stuff that, you know, Georgia sent him when he was, you know, playing, you know, the same kind of care package box. This actually didn't start with Kirby Smart at Georgia. Apparently, according to Drew Butler, it actually extends back to the Mark Richt era doing this kind of thing, because obviously it's not that unique of an idea. It's not that clever to say, let's send some of our gear to our players in the NFL. Every program wants to celebrate its guys in the league. Georgia no different there in that regard. So it's kind of a weird example. The lights from last week, the care packages this week. Boy, Alabama folks certainly seem to be thinking about Georgia a lot. You would think they have enough to do just watching their own team play. But as of right now, that's not necessarily the case. I think that's interesting. Something else that I think is interesting, let me transition and talk about something completely different for a moment. There was obviously kind of a weird weekend where when Georgia doesn't play, most of us like to watch some college football of some stripe, some variety. Hopefully you had a chance to kind of get around and do some other things that you wanted to do, but you're obviously watching some college football. And a lot of people ended up watching what ended up being an ugly blowout between Ohio State and Nebraska. Now, admittedly, there is a real fascination when a player that used to play at Georgia is now playing somewhere else. And there would probably be some of this with Jacob Eason as well. But we saw Eason for a full year at Georgia, so we kind of already know what he looks like as a quarterback. Justin Fields, by comparison, was here last year. We just didn't really see nearly as much of him. He was limited in how Georgia used him for whatever reason. He was limited here at Georgia. So now we're seeing more extended playing time for him in Columbus than we ever saw at Georgia. And that, in its own right, is just going to be fascinating. What does Fields look with an offense that's built around him, designed around him? A lot of Georgia fans were kind of, at one point in time, curious about how that might work in Athens between the hedges, and now it's happening in Columbus, Ohio. And thus far, the results for Fields has been really good, albeit against a pretty weak schedule to start the season for Ohio State. You certainly can't say that Justin Fields hasn't been very good when it comes to the Buckeyes offense, much the same way that Georgia through four games has been very good. They're ranked number three in all the major polls and are kind of one of the top favorites win the national championship. Georgia's off to a very good start. Ohio State under Justin Fields is off to a very good start. And for most people, that's probably going to be enough. But there's always going to be somebody trying to stir the pot. There's always going to be someone out there in the world trying to take something and throw it against the wall and hope that it sticks. And the latest example of that is a guy that we also, I believe, cited on last week's show. It's Dan Wolkin, columnist for USA Today, who among some Georgia fans has a bit of a reputation for being a UGA hater. You can decide for yourself if that's true or not. It's not my place to say that one way or another, but you don't have to look very far on social media to find UGA fans who feel that way. But Wolkin went in pretty hot with a take on Fields on Saturday, and it's worth bringing up on our show for a minute, at least just to make one simple point. Let me show you the tweet from Dan Wolkin, radio and podcast. I'll read this to you. He says, I'm kind of surprised we aren't talking more about the fact that Ohio State has a better quarterback than Georgia, given that Ohio State's quarterback was at Georgia last year. Now, Wolkin got the attention that he wanted coming off that, and obviously Georgia fans were plenty mad, and most UGA fans would say justifiably so, for what Wolkin said off that. And listen, you know, the idea that you're going to base four games, or five games, whatever it's been for Fields now, against the Miami Ohio's of the world, Nebraska, who's terrible, and, you know, the sort of litany of, like, tomato cans that Ohio State's played up at this point in time, the fact that you're going to make some sweeping judgment of Fields compared to Fromm, who we've now seen a body of work that dates back more than 2 years, that on its own is ridiculous. However, it's not my point to bring this up, just to sort of shout it down for being ridiculous. I'm actually, and believe it or not, I'm going to say that what you see here from Wolken, and Wolken wasn't the only one to do it. He was probably the only one to do it that has a blue check next to his name. But there was plenty of sort of fertile soil for hot takes based on Fields playing well for Ohio State on Saturday. Here's what I'm going to tell you. And you can hear me now. You can believe me later. I actually believe this is a really good thing for Georgia. And it goes back to what I said prior to the Notre Dame game. I told a lot of UGA fans of that day in Athens, I'm nervous about the game that I'm not more nervous. I'm worried that I'm not more concerned about Ohio, or about Notre Dame's chances of beating UGA, just given the fact that all the chatter for the entire week was how much better Georgia was than Notre Dame. There was so much, to borrow the old phrase from Nick Saban, there was so much rat poison in the atmosphere that I was really concerned by all of that. Well, now that's not quite the case anymore, right? All of a sudden, with Fields doing what he's doing and the Georgia offense doing what it did against the Fighting Irish, for the good and for the bad, and you can kind of decide for yourself which end of the continuum you're on that, all of a sudden now you do have some critics of the Georgia program coming up. You do have some foes there to be vanquished. I actually really do believe it's a good thing to have some doubters. I think it's a really good thing to have some national media types to put a little bit of a chip on your shoulder. I think that's a really good thing. And I think it's an opportunity for the Georgia offense to focus itself. I think it's an opportunity for this Georgia team to kind of, you know, find some targets out there, some people who don't believe in them, some people who don't think that that Fromm's as good as Fields, for instance, just exactly what Dan Wilkins says. I think this is a ridiculous hot take, but that doesn't mean this can't be used as fuel in the Georgia locker room, focus this team for the rest of the way. All of a sudden, after 5 weeks of football, four games for Georgia, the comparisons have started. How does Georgia compare to the Alabamas and the LSUs of the SEC? How does it compare to the Ohio States and the Oklahomas nationally? That comparison, I think, is a good thing. It allows Georgia to keep its eye on the ball and its focus where it needs to be, getting better each and every week, and making sure that it's the team that puts itself in national championship consideration once the season is done. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us live on video today. We are presented by Georgia United Credit Union, and glad to have you with us, whether it be Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. I said this to our video audience a moment ago. I know there had been some concern that we may be dealing with some troubles on YouTube. That appears to be all fixed up and cleaned away, so we're really happy about that. Also glad to have you with us on the radio, Athens Sports Radio 960 The Rep. And available as a podcast wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. Just really glad to have you part of Dog Nation Daily today. And as I said, we are brought to you by Georgia United Credit Union. And I want to tell you something really cool about GUCU, a really fun thing they have out there. For those of you who want to make sure you have everything Georgia-branded, all the great UGA stuff, this is the next really cool thing to get. You can show your team pride with a Georgia Bulldogs debit card from Georgia United Credit Union. There's three different design options to choose from when you open your free Georgia United checking account. There's also options to earn some interest there as well. Now, there's a lot of great things to know about Georgia United Credit Union. There are 19 branch locations throughout the metro Atlanta area. You've got access to more than 100,000 surcharge-free ATMs. There are enhanced security features and convenient access to your money through online banking as well. Georgia United Credit Union is so much more than a bank. When you connect with them, you're going to find out how true that is. So let me give you the website to go to, especially if you want the Georgia Bulldogs branded debit card. It's GUCU.org/GoDogs. That's GUCU.org/GoDogs. Hope you'll check that out today. All right. With that said, we got John Stinchcomb coming up in a moment. Let me, though, turn our attention to the game for Georgia this Saturday against the Tennessee Vols. Let's do so by going around the doghouse. It's brought today by our friends at Pella Window and Door. And I wanted to take a moment anyway to set the stage for what I think is going to be a pretty interesting generational divide as you head towards Saturday. If you're a young person, I mean younger than me, I'm 42. If you're, let's say, a decade younger than I am, or maybe even in your 20s right now, it's getting harder and harder for you to view Tennessee the way that people my age and older view them. And the simple reason is that I'm old enough to remember, and I hate to say this out loud, but it's true. I'm old enough to remember when Tennessee was working on a very long winning streak against UGA. And beating Tennessee seemed like the most unimaginable thing for George at one point in time. It's disgusting to even think back on that for those of you who cheer for UGA, but that's the era that wasn't too far removed from where we are right now. And as an example of this for people in their 20s and their 30s who look at Georgia on the road this Saturday, they're what, four-touchdown favorite, something along those lines, and see this as a game of very little consequence whatsoever. The one thing you need to understand is for a lot of people who remember, the entire decade of the 90s, really, where Tennessee won every one of those games, some of them close, some of them blowouts, but they essentially won them all. You need to remember and understand just how important a chance to return that favor to Tennessee during this stretch of football, just how important that is for some of the people my age. Let me show you one quote on this. The other a year or so ago, the Red and Black did a oral history of the Georgia win against Tennessee in 2000, which was the first win against the Vols in a long time, and the only time that I know of that the field was stormed at Sanford Stadium and the goalposts were brought down after the game. It was a very weird scene. I happened to be there that night. But as an idea of what the Tennessee, and this wasn't a very good Vols team, by the way, but they were 2 years removed from a national championship. As an idea of the way that Tennessee was viewed back then, I want to show you one quote from that story. This comes from Jamie Henderson, a former UGA defensive back. Let me show this quote as we go around the doghouse here, presented by Pella Window and Door. This is why the Georgia-Tennessee game is still big for plenty of us, even though Tennessee is not quite very good anymore. Here's what Henderson told the Red and Black. I had a friend that was getting recruited by Tennessee. He wanted to go to Georgia or wanted to visit Georgia. Actually, Tennessee told him, Henderson says, I think it was Coach Fulmer, who Philip Fulmer was the coach at the time. This is what Fulmer told this guy who wanted to visit Georgia, a player. He said, why would you want to go to Georgia? They never beat us. That was Philip Fulmer back then. Georgia gets a chance to create its own measure of retribution during this series of this rivalry that Georgia's dominated as of late. And adding another chapter to that lore on Saturday, even against a Tennessee team that's not very good, for a lot of UGA fans like myself, that's pretty fun. It's Around the Doghouse. It's presented by Pella Window and Door. And, of course, you know Pella Window and Door can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They are a national company, which means you get all the resources that come from that, but they have a locally owned branch right here in Georgia, which means you get unparalleled customer service as well. You also get a great deal. You can get 50% off qualifying installations or 0% APR for 48 months, and that offer is valid through November 14th, so you want to take advantage of that right now. Pella also offers the best lifetime warranty as well. There are a couple great ways for you to get in touch with them. You can find them online at PellaSoutheast.us. That website, once again, PellaSoutheast.us, or you can give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. Once again, 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia, they are viewed to be the best. All right, we got a lot more on the Dogs coming up in today's program. For now, though, here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union, hope you enjoy John Stinchcomb right now.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
Great to have John Stinchcomb here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. Big game for Georgia on Saturday, as I said before. Even though Tennessee's not very good, it's still a rivalry game for many of us. Dogs and Vols have a lot of history, and for Georgia, they got a whole bunch of years built up they need to get some revenge for, and the 2019 version of that game certainly provides another chance to be able to do that. John, thanks for being with us here on our program today. Hope you're doing well, and glad to have you with us.
I'm great, and always good to talk Georgia football with you, B.A.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I guess, John, let me start with this. I told a brief story before you joined us about that 2000 game, the goalposts being torn down, the fans running onto the field. At one point in time, believe it or not, for a lot of our audience right now who are in their 20s, beating Tennessee used to be a big enough deal for Georgia. They wanted to storm the field because of it. What are your memories of that 2000 game in particular?
Oh, it was a huge game. Absolutely. I remember the excitement in the stadium, and the fans were so eager that I don't think we were done with the game yet before they were already halfway on the field. So... It was definitely a special moment for all of us, and man, that was a big game. Tennessee, during that time, they were some giants in the SEC, and that was a big win for our program.
Yeah, exactly, and really twofold on this. First of all, the spectacle of the moment was kind of weird because when some fans started running out on the field, my memory is, and you know, sometimes, John, our memories kind of flee us as we get a little older, but y'all were only up 15, and Tennessee had the ball. So, I mean, you know, we're a touchdown and an onside kick converted from this game not exactly being over, but Georgia fans were so hungry for that win against Tennessee. And I guess so, I mean, back then it was kind of a fad to kind of run on the field and do the goalpost thing. Georgia wanted their own turn on that. It was almost like it was a little premature. Do you remember that there were fans on the field before the game was over?
And I try to look back on in a glowing way, but I remember being kind of ticked. I mean,
yeah.
it was not a done deal. And as that hour of the game, some fans have already had a beverage or two and decided that they were ready for the game to be over. And I remember it being a little bit testy. I mean, we want to celebrate with you, but let us win it first, you know?
Yeah, no doubt about that. Yeah, that's.
I think hopefully our crowd has a much higher IQ these days because, you know, that could have been costly. You talk about a penalty here or there for fan interference, and that might be a very different outcome.
Yeah, I think that's a very true. But as we said before, you know, if you're, you know, I'm a little older than you are, but if you're kind of around our age, I think you do have an understanding of, you know, beating Tennessee just used to be a big deal. And for a lot of Georgia fans this week, they sort of think of this as like an extended, you know, almost like a homecoming road game. Georgia's like a 4-touchdown favorite. It's fast forward to November. Let's get ready for Florida. Let's get ready for Auburn. Let's get ready for games this season that seem to matter a little bit more. But, I mean, I do kind of find myself as, at least compared to some of our audience and elder statesmen, saying, let's don't gloss over this one quite so quick. South Carolina, Kentucky, if you want to look past those, that's fine. But Neyland Stadium, you know, I can remember when this is a house of horror for UGA. I can remember that games up there were by no means a guarantee. You were part of the Hobnail Boot game in 2001. You know how special it is to win on that soil. You know, let's not gloss over, you know, checkerboard end zones in Neyland Stadium. May seem like a downtrodden opponent, but this, for me, and for a lot of Georgia fans who think of this as a rivalry, is still a game worth celebrating.
Now, I think it's one of the biggest rivalries in the SEC East, and it's amazing they're as down as far. You always seem like one of the teams that perennially is in the discussion, and, you know, for our era, the Vols was always, I mean, talk about a hostile place to play. I mean, you had 100,000 plus, and that stadium was literally shaking. There was it would get so loud you couldn't hear your own self think, much less the quarterback call the play. So it was not an easy place to play, and one of those rivalries that you wouldn't even consider looking past Tennessee. But it's amazing to me, and you know, for Dawg fans, we know Coach Pruitt and his background and experience in Athens, a defensive coordinator, and kind of the drama that unfolded there with Coach Rick. And there's more to it that I'm sure has been left unspoken, but I can't say that I'm truly devastated to see that Tennessee is down as a program. But, it is weird to think that in the SEC East, Tennessee is not held in the same regard. It's quite a steep slope they've fallen down.
Yeah, that's very true. Can you clear up something else for me? And I know that you were in the NFL in kind of the early days of Mark Richt, so maybe you didn't get this. There's been kind of a weird debate among fans lately. And, John, I realize this is a ludicrous topic. I do realize. But this is what we talk about on weekends when Georgia doesn't play. Some Alabama folks were mad that apparently Kirby Smart sends care boxes to players who were in the NFL. We showed a video of Reggie Ragland, the former very good Alabama linebacker, a little bit of, not exactly making a huge impact in the NFL right now, but was a very good player for the Crimson Tide. But he was upset that Mecole Hardman for the Chiefs got a box with a bunch of Georgia gear in it. He says that tradition started with Alabama, and Georgia shouldn't be copying that. Now, Drew Butler, who did play at UGA after you, says that, no, Mark Richt was sending this stuff to us when I was playing in the NFL. This didn't come to Georgia because of Kirby Smart. It's not necessarily a copycat move by Alabama necessarily. Did you get care packages when you were playing for the New Orleans Saints?
Oh, the ego of the Alabama Crimson Tide. It's not all about you, Alabama. We used to get the packages with the media guide and a shirt and a hat and some
Southwest. Yeah, you got some love from the team, and we weren't the only ones. There were some other schools that would send their guys care packages, if you will. So, sorry, Alabama, that's not your show. That's not your only special sauce in how they care for some of their veterans. I think it's a smart move. I mean, you want to see your dynamic playmakers in the NFL rocking your school's gear. So when you look at Mecole Hardman, he's decked out in his new Georgia stuff, and then that looks good to a 16- and 17-year-old recruit and anybody else across the country that says, man, Georgia takes care of their own.
Without a doubt. Thank you so much for clearing that up, because your rookie year in the NFL was 2003. You were rookie in 03, is that right?
Sir, one more time.
So you were a rookie in the NFL in 03, right?
03, yep. That
yeah,
was
so we're talking, you know, this is...
Oh, it goes well before. He was still in diapers when we were getting care packages, so...
John, I appreciate you clearing that up. It's Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. We are presented by Georgia United Credit Union today. And if you're watching us on video, one of the things you see on the desk in front of us, it's the same thing you see when John's with us for our Marlowe's matchup on Thursday. I get so many questions about this each and every time it's on our set here. It's the hover helmet. It's the floating suspended UGA helmet. It's seemingly floating right there in midair, and it really is. This is not an optical illusion. It really is floating in midair. And it's a really cool product brought to you by our friends at Hover Helmet. And Hover Helmets and Dog Nation want you to have one of these for yourself. So here's what you can do. You can actually get 20% off right now, but you got to go to the Dog Nation homepage. When you get into dognation.com, which you go to every day anyway, right there at the top of the page, dognation.com, you see the link there for the Hover Helmets. You can get in there. I know some of you have tried to order the Hover Helmet, and they were sold out of the UGA. The great news is they are accepting offers right now. You can get in on this, and you can get one of these for yourself. Go to dognation.com, find the Hover Helmets link, and then you can use the promo code DOGNATION. You can also go to hoverhelmets.com there as well. But right now, the simplest way to do this is on the Dog Nation page here today. Use the promo code Dog Nation, and you can get 20% off your order while supplies last with our friends at Hover Helmets. And it's really fun to have the Hover Helmet right here on our desk here today. All right, John, for a moment, let me talk about a slightly more serious subject here while I still have you on the phone. One of the things I also addressed before you got here, you know, admittedly, it's a little bit of a source of curiosity when a guy that Georgia had on its roster last year and didn't play very much, Justin Fields, now gets extended playing time, seemingly for a smart offense coach who has built an offense around his skill set. You can't help but be curious about that. And on Saturday, Fields was playing against Nebraska in a big national TV spot. Georgia fans didn't have their team play at all. So there are going to be a lot of hot topics and a lot of debates come up about what Fields is now, what he was last year. Did Georgia use him properly? Did Fields leave improperly? You know, there's going to be all kinds of, you know, things that come up from something like this. You are, I think, of as a pretty, you know, mild-mannered guy. You're pretty level-headed. You obviously love UGA, but you have, I think, a pretty balanced perspective when it comes to life. As someone who cares about UGA, who wants the football team to be the best that it can be, who sees Fields doing great things at Ohio State, simultaneous to Georgia, still doing some pretty good stuff of its own right now, what would you tell UGA fans about the Fields experience, and now that he is on one of the teams that could potentially be a foe for the Dogs in the playoff? What is your perspective on all this?
Well, I think Justin Fields is the player that everyone expected him to be. He just didn't have the opportunity at Georgia like he has in Ohio State. Jake Fromm is a great quarterback and is established, and it's tough to justify taking the ball out of his hand, even if it's a well-heralded five-star quarterback coming in that you know has talent. Now, the discussion can be, what if he was utilized differently his freshman year? I mean, there's so much you can look back in retrospect and say, oh, if he'd only done this, Justin Fields would still be wearing the real red and black and not red and, you know, what is that, pewter? I don't know. So, you know, it's hard. I think he's a great player, and he's making plays for a very talented team against some not-so-talented teams. And, you know, Nebraska isn't the team of old that would scare folks. So he's putting up good numbers, and Georgia fans, I think, probably point to more. You didn't get to see him throw the ball his freshman year at Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, every time he came in, it was almost another running back and wildcat situation because there wasn't a lot of downfield passing, and that seems to be an area that he's excelling in for Ohio State. And that might cause some frustration for these Georgia fans. But at the end of the day, you got to love our quarterback. I think Jake Fromm is he's special, and not just for what he does on the field, but his intangibles. It's not any kind of criticism on Justin. Obviously, he's a very talented guy who's been given an opportunity, and he's taken the most of it. But, you know, we had a spoil of riches last year, and I'm happy to see Justin succeed until we play up against him. And I think there's no debate that we've got a great quarterback in Jake Fromm. So there should be, from my perspective, no ill will for either one of these guys.
Before I let you go, John, I want to talk to you about something real quick that I'm really proud to see you as involved with as you are. And this is something here on Dog Nation Daily we're going to be talking about a lot in the kind of weeks and months to come, because I think this is a great cause. TouchdownsForChildrens.org. Obviously, we're big believers around here in the work that Children's Healthcare does. I mean, listen, I think a lot of us have had kids that have kind of, been taken care of by some of their doctors and physicians and things like that. And obviously an organization like this has to be funded and supported to continue to doing the things that it does. And I think we can kind of tie this into college football. This turns into a really fun thing as well, and another opportunity for UGA fans to kind of show their pride on this. John, I can't wait to make our audience more acquainted with this coming up in the days ahead, but would you mind just kind of setting the stage for why this is an important thing for you as UGA fans themselves kind of get aware of a great opportunity that's going to be ongoing here for the next little bit?
Well, it's such a blessing for all of us to be connected with the Dog Nation, right? I mean, we're proud of our school. We're proud of our team. And years ago, when I was fortunate enough to play in the NFL, my brother and I, we decided we wanted to give back and tap into it. And so we've formed a relationship with Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, among others, just because they do such an amazing job, and they care for our kids so well. It's one of those situations where you hope you don't never have to use them, but you're so glad that they're there when you do. And over the years, we've been, fortunate enough to spend some time with the kids, and the care they receive at Children's Healthcare is second to none. So 3 years ago, they started a program called Touchdown for Kids, or for Children, excuse me, Touchdown for Children, and it's to benefit to help fund some of their various efforts for children with cancer. And, man, what an honorable thing to take up. It's a great mantle. And the way they're doing it is we get to show our school pride. And there's no school that has a fan base like ours that taps in. I mean, the way we've supported, what was it, 3 weeks ago, half the stadium's in pink.
Yeah.
Because our fans care, and they're engaged. And this is an opportunity, Touchdown for Children. It's a way to show our school pride that benefits kids that need us. And, for 3 years now, you can log on, and Kirby Smart's a big proponent of it. He's got his own team. So I would advise all those out there listening to check it out, get involved, because the kids need us, and we as a Dog Nation do an unbelievable job of supporting those that need our help, and this is a great opportunity to do it.
Let me give the website one more time. It's Touchdown for Children's, that's with an S, touchdownforchildrens.org/team/university-of-Georgia. So it's a lot easier to see if you're watching a video, but touchdownsforchildrens.org/team/university-of-Georgia, and you can get in there. The goal this year is to raise more than $1 million. There's $606,000 raised a year ago, so a big opportunity for UGA fans to get involved, show their team spirit, and raise money for a terrific cause. That's going to be incredible. John, I really appreciate you being with us here today on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. I look forward to seeing you this Thursday for our Marlowe's matchup and what you and I both think is a big game against the Vols. Despite the fact that Georgia's a big favorite, it should be a fun breakdown, and I can't wait to see you there coming up for that.
It's going to be great. Can't wait to see you Thursday.
Sounds good, John. Thanks for your time.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Boy, you talk about coming through in the clutch. Thank you so much to John Stinchcomb. First of all, I think very level-headed analysis when it comes to the Justin Fields situation. It's one of those things where it's a little bit maddening to me, the fact that Fields' name, just in any form or fashion, is such a hot topic. I mean, I am aware that there are other websites that occasionally talk about UGA. We're not the only one that does that. They also have message boards. You can look at our forum. You can look at other message boards. Pretty much any thread that brings up Fields eventually gets locked. It's just kind of the nature of the beast right now. But Ohio State's a legit playoff contender. Fields is their quarterback. Georgia's a legit playoff contender. They could very well be matched up against him at some point in time. Georgia fans are going to probably have to find a way to talk about this subject at some point. I thought John did a good job setting the stage for that. But more interestingly, the fact that John says, I was a rookie in the NFL in 2003, and I was getting care packages back then. The idea that Reggie Ragland, these Alabama folks, think anything that's even a semi-decent idea somehow was invented by Nick Saban in Tuscaloosa, that's an embarrassing level of delusion on the part of Crimson Tide fans, but nonetheless, pretty interesting stuff. Let me just do this kind of simplest part of our SEC through right now. Let me just kind of bang through some of the top storylines of the weekend, and let me start with the Auburn Tigers. Now, we could do a whole deal on things where I was right and things where I was wrong. There are a couple things that I've kind of been proven right on and a lot of things I've been proven really, 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 really wrong on. I'm sure over the course of the next few weeks we'll hit on them all of them. But I told you before the season I was very skeptical of Joe Moorhead at Mississippi State, despite the fact that he was, getting some preseason top 25 love in some polls. However, even though I don't think Mississippi State's very good, and that was validated by how badly they got beat up by Auburn on Saturday night, y'all, this Auburn situation is turning into a thing. Now, I don't think Auburn's better than Georgia, and I don't think Auburn's better than Alabama. Probably don't even think Auburn's better than LSU. In fact, I don't. But I do think they are getting better offensively at the right time. And, Auburn's always dangerous when they can run the football. Last year didn't run it quite as well. This year they're running it much better. I think Bo Nix is getting comfortable. And we always knew that Nix would be a different quarterback at the end of the season than he was at the beginning. Well, you're starting to see some of that maturation take place. I know he threw a big touchdown pass in his first game, but he's getting better over time now. Offensively, they really seem to click a good bit against Mississippi State this past Saturday. Now, it's a big showdown on Saturday. We haven't seen Florida play anyone yet all year. They played Towson, for goodness sakes, on Saturday, although I guess Joe Flacco's brother was the Towson quarterback. But nonetheless, we haven't seen Florida against anybody of merit. Saturday, that changes. It's against Auburn. Auburn, I think, would have to have had to validate themselves based on the way they played thus far. One of the real interesting stories in the SEC to this point in the season is how much better Auburn is in comparison to where we thought they'd be at the beginning of the year. Very interesting stuff. Now, on the far other end of the spectrum right now is Texas A&M. Y'all, I made my case for A&M being a dangerous opponent. I made my case that given the right confluence of events, this could have even been a top 10 team. If you'll go back and listen to me during the preseason, there was a lot that I said about A&M that has proven to be wrong. However, I think now, the deeper we get into the year, and if you saw it on Saturday, they played way closer than they were supposed to against Arkansas. Arkansas is legitimately, without question, one of the worst teams in the country. And A&M was in a fight for their life to the very end of the game. That's an embarrassing situation for Jimbo Fisher to find himself in. But what you see here is, and the reason why I'm going to stop short of blaming Fisher for what's happening in A&M right now, A&M is just not a physical football team. They are just not. And Jimbo Fisher has said a lot about wanting to make them be that way. Physical on defense, running the ball on offense. A&M can't run it at all. They can't. They can't run it at all. What you see here is that Kevin Sumlin, when he was at A&M before Fisher got there, was very Big 12 oriented, right? A lot of throwing the football, a lot of Texas high school football stuff. I've said before that Texas high school football compared to some of the other states, it has a great reputation, but that's not a very physical brand of football they play there oftentimes either. They take the 11 best players, they put them all on offense, and the Big 12 teams and a lot of these programs that are populated with Texas players, you sort of see a version of that in what they bring to the table. And right now, Texas A&M has brought in a kind of a physical style coach, and they are not making that transition very well. So until they find a way to just play a little bit more SEC style smash mouth, what Fisher is supposed to bring to the table, that transition, even though he's recruiting pretty well, that transition is just taking longer than I think he probably thought it was going to take. Second years are normal when we see big jumps take place. But right now, the style that Fisher wants to bring to A&M, it's just not sticking there in College Station. Alabama, they move up to number one this weekend on the basis of Clemson almost losing to North Carolina. But boy, did you watch a bunch of that game against Ole Miss this past weekend? Wasn't it a little bit interesting to see Ole Miss pretty effectively running the football? John Rhys Plumlee, who, by the way, kind of interesting to see, the one-time UGA committed quarterback, he's pretty good, and he's given a little bit of a spark to Ole Miss, both near the end of the Cal game, a game the Rebels lost, and they got blown out on Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Plumlee's a pretty interesting quarterback prospect right now. Kind of interesting to see him doing what he's doing, running the football. You know, a couple times Ole Miss just lined it up and, you know, gave it to running back, and the offensive line was getting a little bit of movement right there. So we've seen now a couple things from Alabama near the start of the season. We have seen a little bit of imperfect running game from them on the offensive side of the ball. They have not rushed it perfectly all season long. And on Saturday against Ole Miss, and that's a blowout game, maybe you're not quite as focused, and that's always an issue. I'm sure it was hot in Tuscaloosa. It's been hot everywhere in the Deep South now for a little while. Not quite so focused on defense. I got to say, if you're going to start comparing blemishes for the top teams in the country, I know there was some criticism. I participated in this. I'll admit that. A little bit of criticism for Georgia coming off the Notre Dame game in some pockets of maybe not as impressive against the Fighting Irish as they're supposed to be, although Notre Dame did cover against Virginia this past Saturday, for what it's worth. You know, there was, you know, a little bit of that. In totality, I think the resume that Georgia's put together through its first four games, I think looks plenty fine compared to Alabama, who's had issues running the football and defensively, LSU, which has got major issues defensively right now. Some of these other teams like Oklahoma and Ohio State haven't played anybody as of yet. If you're going to start doing, you know, resume report card comparisons through the first trimester of the season or what is now five full weeks of the season, Georgia having played four times, Georgia's not a perfect team by any stretch, but I'll believe I'll take Georgia's imperfections in comparison to some of the imperfections we've seen from some of the teams around the country right now, and we'll make that your SEC through. Let me do one more thing also real quick, too, as part of our SEC through before we completely slam the door on that. South Carolina-Kentucky, I was actually hoping that would end up being a better game than it turned out to be. One of the things I am plenty right about is, you know, this Mark Stoops transformation at Kentucky, that was fool's gold the entire time. This is the worst team in the SECs. Maybe Vanderbilt ends up being worse, but I told you before I was not a believer in Kentucky. And I know they got quarterback injuries and everything else. They even finally put the wide receiver, their very good wide receiver. They put him in at quarterback before the night was over in Columbia on Saturday night. This is not a good Kentucky team right now. They are a mess. South Carolina gets a win it desperately needs. Muschamp probably saves a little bit of restlessness among his fans because of that, but Kentucky is awful at the moment, and now for real and for sure we'll make that your SEC through. And with that in mind, let's do what we do each and every Monday here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union. Let's get ready for a Heisman hierarchy. It's presented by our friends at Kroger, and we start to see a pretty interesting Heisman race starting to take shape right now. And I do truly believe that Jake Fromm and DeAndre Swift continue to be a big part of. And obviously there's an element of wishful thinking on the part of this program and dog fans in general for one of these two guys to be in New York before the end of the season. I won't pretend that we don't sort of begin with the end in mind in terms of what the most favorable outcome would be. However, even though that right now Fromm and Swift don't have the eye-popping stats, a guy like, say, Jalen Hurts at Oklahoma does, as long as Georgia keeps on doing what it's doing, humming right along to the tune of being on the shortest of short lists for competing for the national championship, I think Fromm and Swift both have the opportunity to earn that best player on the best team status, which would get you to New York City and give you a chance to win the award. I'm still not quite sure between the two who is the most likely of the Heisman candidates. On the one hand, you know, the media really, really loves Fromm. There was a lot of glowing things said about him, minus the dude from USA Today. A lot of glowing things said about him after the Notre Dame game. DeAndre Swift's going to have the highlights, like the miraculous leap he pulled off against Notre Dame this past Saturday. But between Fromm and Swift, they're both in there. Other than that, obviously it's Joe Burrow from LSU. He's throwing the ball all over the yard. Jalen Hurts, his stats keep getting better. I think that Justin Fields is a real, legit Heisman Trophy contender. And I think the other one you got to mention here is Tua Tagovailoa. It's those guys and the two guys from Georgia. Right now, it's not a Clemson player. Clemson's just not playing good enough on offense right now to have one of their guys in major consideration. Georgia gets better competition, has been putting up better overall production right now. So it's Fromm and Swift ahead of Etienne and Lawrence, at least right now, chasing these quarterbacks who are all putting up monster numbers in many cases with their arms and their legs both. So that's our Heisman hierarchy. It's presented today by Kroger. And by the way, speaking of Fromm and Swift, why is it that they are such a big part of this? Well, Kirby Smart explained, going back to the Notre Dame game this past Saturday. Here is Smart on his two-star players.
There were some really large hearts out there tonight. One, DeAndre Swift, who ran the ball with passion, guts, and just relentless effort. The effort and leadership of a Jake Fromm to third down scramble and take two hits and almost get a first and manage the game really beautifully.
Yeah, so listen, those kinds of words from Smart on his star players, those will impact the media and they will impact the Heisman voters. If Georgia falters on the field, then the candidacy for Fromm and Swift are probably over because they're not going to be in the same statistical category some of these other guys are going to be. But as long as Georgia keeps winning and Kirby keeps saying things like that, you better believe these guys are a big part of that conversation. It's all brought to you by Kroger. It's pumpkin flavors back here at Kroger this fall. Now, it's going to get cool weather at some point in time, which we're all really looking forward to and waiting for. Well, you can get yourself in the fall spirit before that by going and checking out your local Kroger. All the pumpkin stuff, whether it be pumpkin flavored coffee, pumpkin spice coffee, pumpkin pies, even pumpkin scented candles. They've got all that for you at your local Kroger to get you ready for the fall season. All right, as we wrap up here today, let me do so by saying this. Before we do our Gatorhead Updater, by the way. I thought the most interesting development of all on Saturday that got no attention whatsoever, but I believe this may matter before the year is done. If Georgia keeps winning, I believe that Georgia will be the number one seed in the college football playoff when it's all said and done. Now, running the table in the SEC and, you know, winning the league championship, depending on which one of these teams emerges in the West, that's by no means a given. But the door is now open to be the number one seed. Clemson has faltered enough to have at least a little bit of a doubter in that regard. I'll remind you one more time when that matters. The Peach Bowl is a playoff game this year. That game is in Atlanta. If you can be in Atlanta, that's where you want to be. You don't want to be in Arizona. Clemson's at least faltered enough for that to be a real consideration for Georgia. How about a Gatorator Updater? It's been 1,066 days since Florida's beaten Georgia. That's good news. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Dog Nation Daily, presented by Georgia United Credit Union.